This lecture is dedicated in memory of Yaakov Pesach ben Yosef Tzvi, who passed away on the 24th of Iyar in the year 5743, and Dvorah bas Yehoshua, who passed away on the 13th of Nisan in the year 5723. It's dedicated by their family, Rita and Nehemia Roth and family. In the history of the Jewish people, we find many, many times what can be called lost opportunities, great opportunities that presented themselves for changing all of world history and world civilization, and somehow the opportunity went the glimmering. It faded. It didn't turn into what it could have been. The Tanakh, in the story of the King Chizkiyahu, the famous king of Yehuda, presents us with this opportunity. We find in the Chumash that there were opportunities before the eagle, there were opportunities when the Jews came into Eretz Yisrael, there were opportunities during the time of the Shoftim, there were opportunities during the time of kings of Shaul HaMelech, opportunities during the time of Shlomo. The tragedy of a lost opportunity, I mean, the saddest words in the world are what might have been. And here we have an example of this, because Chizkiyahu HaMelech, who was 290 years after his grandfather, Shlomo HaMelech, he was the last great opportunity for the kingdom of Judah. He is the watershed, so to speak, in the story of the first temple. And not only was he the opportunity for the kingdom of Judah, he was the opportunity for all of Jewish history. Because our rabbis tell us that Bikesh HaKadosh Baruch Hu Lasos Chizkiyahu Mashiach. God wanted to make Chizkiyahu the Mashiach. Chizkiyahu had messianic potential. He could have been the Mashiach. He would have been the Mashiach. He would have saved the first Churban, the second Churban, the Golas. The whole thing would have been changed. We don't know what history would look like. There are many books written now, revisionist histories, what would have been. There's a book, you know, what if the Nazis would have won the war, what the world would look like. What if the South would have won the Civil War. That's always fascinating, because of the fact that these were real possibilities. How would society look today? How would civilization appear today had those possibilities become real? Well, what if Chizkiyahu would have been the Mashiach? So then we don't know what kind of world we would live in, except we're certain that it would be a better world than the one we're having to contend with now. And it didn't happen, as I will discuss with you in a few moments. It just didn't happen. In its not happening lies the tragedy of the king, but not more than that lies the tragedy of the Jewish people and of humanity generally, because it's almost, as we will see, the king willed it not to happen. Sometimes an opportunity presents itself, and one doesn't realize that the opportunity is there. So then you lost the opportunity by default. You didn't realize it was there. You couldn't do anything about it. Sometimes the opportunity presents itself, and you know it's there, and you want to do it, and somehow it doesn't happen, right? Your broker's telephone is busy. The line is busy. You can't do it. You know it's good. You want to do it. You know the line is busy. You can't get through. So to speak, minas shamayim, from heaven, they hold the opportunity back from occurring. But sometimes you have, which is this tragedy, is that the opportunity is there, and Chizkiyahu knows the opportunity is there, and he doesn't want to take advantage of the opportunity. It's a conscious decision on his part not to do so. The world is free choice. God allows man every choice. From this story, we see that God allows everyone the opportunity to turn down being Mashiach. That's a concept That's a concept that we don't usually think of. First of all, who wouldn't want to be Mashiach, right? There are lots of people who aren't, who claim it. And therefore, it's unlikely. But if you'll think into it, there's a very strong possibility that many people would pass it up. And Chizkio knows about it, and he does pass it up. It's a conscious decision on his part. The Gemara tells us that Chizkio is a sandwich between a father who's a terrible Russia and a son who is a worse Russia. In the dynasty of the kings of Judah, as I mentioned to you in the last brilliant lecture, there is a pattern. And the pattern is good, bad, good, bad, good, bad. So that everybody's undoing what happened before. And in effect, it's a checkmate because nobody is able to enforce their ultimate will, either for good or for bad, but in such a situation, no progress is made either. And when no spiritual progress is made, then it must go down, it must decline automatically. So he had a father and a son, both of whom were terribly evil people, and both of whom were kings, and his son, in fact, Menashe, was the longest reigning king of the Jewish people. 55 years he was a king. It says in the verse in the Novi Yeshayahu, on Yeshayahu, the prophet is also involved. This is a story of three people, Chizkio, Yeshayo, Menashe, the father, the son, and the uncle or the nephew. There's a difference of opinion whether Yeshayo was his nephew or his uncle, but he was a close relative of the king. According to most, and he was the grandfather of Menashe. And the grandson killed the grandfather. But in the Novi Yeshayo says in the Pasuk, Mar li mar. It is bitter to me, bitter to me. So the Gemara Darshan's Mar li mar. Li, me, I'm in the middle. On one side, my father is mar, is bitter. On the other side, my son is bitter. And Chizkio has a premonition about his son. The Talmud tells us that Chizkio never wanted to get married because he knew that he would have such a son. And it's only the Novi Yeshayo that prevails upon him, as again we will see. When he takes over the reins of government, first of all, Chizkio himself is a product of a miracle. Because his father offered him up as a sacrifice to the Molech, to the idol Molech. And his mother smeared him with a special potion that enabled him to withstand the fire. So he's a miracle. Chazal mean to tell us there that anybody who can beat a Mashiach is a miracle. The potential for Mashiach within the Jewish people is by definition miraculous. Mashiach is not an ordinary event, just as the survival of the Jewish people is not an ordinary event. It's always extraordinary. It's always miraculous. When he became the king of Israel, of the king of Judah, he did not give his father a state funeral. In fact, he gave his father a funeral where he dragged his body through the streets in back of a chariot as a kapora for his father, as a forgiveness for his father for all the evil that he had done. Our rabbis say, the Gemara in Psochim discusses it, that there were six bizarre things, so to speak, in halacha that Chizkio did. And three things the rabbis agreed with him and three things they disagreed with him. But this thing, that what he did to his father, they agreed that he was sincere and that it helped his father. Even though it was and it helped the Jewish people because it was a public display. There are many times when a person is terribly evil and he gets a noble funeral. the nature of people is to give a noble funeral, because you figure the guy's gone, you know, might as well be a nice guy about it. But that has a terribly deleterious effect upon society, because when the Russians did it right, they took Stalin out of the tomb, right? That's it. He moved them, Khrushchev. Now that was a statement. See, even now when they moved him back, you know, he keeps on moving. Finds no rest in the grave, you know. But that was a good statement, because that already said something about him. Nobody's going to move Washington from Mount Vernon. So Chizkio's statement about his father made a deep impression upon the Jewish people, and made an impression because they knew that Chizkio was a righteous man, and that if he did it to make a point. And that point was well accepted. Now, during the reign of King Chizkio, the Jewish people suffered terrible reverses. As I discussed with you, the northern kingdom fell, and Chizkio himself was beset by two great powers, first by Aram, and then when Aram was captured, Syria was captured, taken over by Assyria, by the Nineveh, Sanherib, the general, came south. So after he conquered the city of Shomron, and after he conquered the northern kingdom, he then set his sights upon the southern kingdom, because he was going to make a clean sweep. He was going to go all the way to Egypt. And Yerushalayim stood in his way. Yerushalayim stood in his way, prevented him. So he laid siege to the city of Jerusalem. Chizkio tried to buy him off. He gave him all the treasure that he had in the king's palace, all the treasure that he had in the temple, in the Beis Hamikdash, everything he tried. Because he felt himself defenseless against this enormous army which had conquered everything. And the northern kingdom was much stronger than the kingdom of Judah. And if the northern kingdom, with all of its military might, was unable to withstand the army of Sanherib, there was little hope left. Deep down in his heart, Chazal tell us, deep down in his heart, he also felt that the Jewish people didn't have the schusim, which is always a strange thing. A leader of the people should be like a father to children. A father knows his child's defect. He knows what's wrong with his children. But he has such an overwhelming love of his children that he'll come to school and he'll battle the teacher knowing that the teacher is correct. But nevertheless, the sign of a father is that he give my kid a chance, he'll outgrow it, or this, that, right? Then we all say that, and that's the nature of being a parent. The nature of being a parent is to stick up for the child, even if you know the child's problems. And a parent usually knows the child's problems to a greater extent than anyone else, even if we are not happy to admit it to ourselves. Well, it's the same thing with being the king. You may know the defects and faults of the Jewish people, but you cannot say that because of that, therefore they are unworthy of divine providence. They are unworthy of divine intervention. They are not worthy of being saved. And we find, again, in the comparison of the King Chizkio to the Novi Yeshayo, that when God calls the Novi to his great ministry, he says, Mi Elech Lonu, who will go for us? Esmi Eshlach, who will I send? So the Novi says, Hineni Shlocheni, send me. Great. In heaven, all the angels applaud. But then he adds something. He says, But I am an unclean person, and I live amongst an unclean people. So it says immediately an angel flies over to the Navi with a hot coal and burns his lips. You don't say that. If you want to be a Navi for the Jewish people, you tell them whatever you want to tell them. And you can tell them as strongly as you want. And we see with the Navi Yeshayo, anyone who reads the first chapter, the Navi Yeshayo, Shabbos Chazon, the Haftorah of Chazon Yeshayo, I mean, there is no indictment that approaches that in its scalpel-like rendering of the Jewish body, of what's wrong with us. But that's to the Jewish people. You can tell them. But not in heaven, not the strangers. Don't publish an ad in the New York Times. God doesn't like that. In heaven they don't stand, even from the most righteous of people. You know, you don't like Eretz Yisrael, whether one doesn't like it for being too left or too right. You know, there is in our time, one of the strangest paradoxes that has happened in Jewish history is who's in the same bed with whom. And that should give everybody pause. I always feel it should give everybody pause. Right? If all the Kofrim and the Linke and everybody else are in the same bed with the Frume, there's something wrong somewhere. God certainly doesn't have anoia from it. So you don't take an ad in the paper. You don't write like that. You're not allowed to say that. That's a weakness in you. And that weakness in you will carry over. And Chazal sensed that in Chizkiyo also. Chizkiyo, he knows the weaknesses of Jewish people. He knows that in a minute they can all turn to idolatry again. He builds the greatest school system in the history of the Jewish people. Medon Vad Be'er Shevav, every 8-year-old child knew everything. All the halachas of Tumen Tahara, right? All the Pirchei contests. They all got free subscriptions to the Jewish press. It was terrific. Everybody knew, and every kid knows 12,000 Mishnayos by heart, but he knows that ain't it. Tomorrow they can all be worshiping the Baal. It can go in a second. Which is a lesson for us also, that it can go in a second. Only people who are nervous about its going are people that are zoche that it shouldn't go. People who feel that, you know, they got it made. That's when God shows you. So he doesn't have such a sanguine opinion of the Jewish people. And therefore, that's part of the chink in his armor. And we're talking here about a great man, very great man. A man that could have been the Mashiach. So therefore, anything that we say about him has to be understood in relative terms. But the greater a person is, the more microscopic the analysis that Chazal do upon him. And therefore, Chizkiyo HaMelech, who is such a great person, his almost microscopic failings that in an ordinary person would not even be visible are highlighted and brought to the fore so that we understand what happened here. We also understand how fragile human beings are. So our rabbis tell us that Sanherib came and laid siege to the city. Our rabbis tell us here a frightening story. Again, only Chazal can tell it to us. He didn't want to get married. So what happened was that the Navi Yeshayo offered him his daughter as his wife, because he said, between you and me, you know, two such great in-laws, it was a Rebbesha wedding, right? The Navi Yeshayo and the King Chizkiyo, right? They had to rent the felt for him. It was a big wedding. And all the tzaddikim, what could be better than that? But his worst fears were confirmed. According to Chazal, he had two sons, both of whom were terrible Rishoyim. One son, the oldest son, was Rav Shoke. Rav Shoke became an apostate, and he went over to the side of Ashur, and he was the spokesman for Ashur against the Jews, against his father's family, against his father. And the Tanakh describes to us that Rav Shoke stood on the walls of Jerusalem in the middle of the siege, and he spoke to the Jewish people, and he said to them, "You idiots, what you trust? Who do you trust in? Chizkiyahu isn't going to do it. Your army isn't worth anything. So who do you trust in God?" He said, "Well, sir, God, he's not going to help you. He's as only a Jew can," he said both sides of the story. He said, first of all, there is no God. And second of all, he's not going to help you. You're not worthy of his help. I know your failings. Why should he help you? Did he help your brethren, the 10 northern tribes, when we came against them? You're lost. It's interesting, the answer. What did the Jewish people answer? The Jewish people told him, the officers of Chizkiyahu told him, "Don't speak Yehudis. Don't speak Hebrew to us. Because when you speak Hebrew, you demoralize everybody. Speak to us, speak Assyrian, right? Speak English. Don't speak Hebrew to us." What a lesson. I always felt, I think it's a lesson for our times. Here you got a guy that speaks perfect Hebrew, right? Ivrit b'Ivrit. 100%. Great. A non-Jewish Jew who turns into the greatest enemy of the Jewish people and who comes to mock them in their own language and who is from the king's own household. And the Jewish people are powerless to do anything about it. Until the Navi says, because the Navi doesn't get nervous. People of faith are the only people, even in terrible times, they're the only ones that did not lose they didn't lose the thread of survival. They didn't lose the purpose of life. So in not losing faith, the Navi restores the balance. And the Navi says, "Don't worry about Rav Shoke. God will shut his mouth. You don't have to answer," which is another great lesson. Right? Let God take care of things too, right? I don't have to settle everything myself. I don't have to do everything. Ribbono Shalom will take care. His second son, Menashe, who is going to inherit the throne, will, as I have mentioned, be the chief Rosha, the chief evil person among all the kings of Judah, who will restore all the paganism and tear down everything that his father built and defile the temple and corrupt society, and who at the end tries to do tshuva. On the night of Pesach, an angel comes and smites the army of Assyria. A plague breaks out, and the army is destroyed. We say it in the piyut that we say at the Seder, "Vayhi b'chatzi alayla." So there the poet, the Paitan, describes for us how on the night of Pesach, the army of Sancheiriv is destroyed. Imagine. The Jewish people stand before tremendous annihilation. They stand before the destruction of everything. They have an army that is an implacable foe that has defeated everybody. The city has been under siege for a long period of time. There is no hope. and you have this constant propaganda barrage in Hebrew that weakens the morale and the fiber of the people. And the Jewish people get up on the morning, the first morning of Pesach, and the threat is removed. Someone has smitten the arm with the sword that was raised against them. So Chazal say, the Midas Adin said to the Rabbona Shel Olam, the measure of justice which by which we all fall short, unfortunately, said to God, Hoyolo Lomar Shira. He should have said, praise of God. He should have said, Hallel. He should have stood up and praised you for that. And he didn't. And because of that, he wasn't Mashiach. Again, frightening story. The opportunity is lost. And Chazal say very strongly, Chazal say two reasons why he didn't say Shira. Also frightening. One reason is, he said, listen, it's not my business. Hashem Oshia Amelech Yaneinu B'Yom Koreinu. God will save us, right? You know, I'm going to sleep. That's the words of Chazal, right? He's going to bed. He doesn't want to be the Mashiach, which he's entitled not to be. He's entitled to make that choice. He said, I don't want to be it. God will save him without me. It's okay. Let it go. And the second thing that Chazal say is based on the posuk, again in the Novi Shayo, that he told him, Mudaz os b'chol ha'aretz. Everybody knows that God is going to perform miracles for us. You know, there's nothing. Why should we even bother to say Shira? Shira is when something special happens. There's nothing. What did he do? He saved the Jewish people. That's like, you know, that's like everyday news. Chazal called that Melumed Benisim. The Jewish people are accustomed to miracles. We're so accustomed to miracles that it make no impression upon us. None. Because they make no impression upon us, so, you know, that's the way it's supposed to be. What am I supposed to say? What am I supposed to do? I had that feeling this Shabbos in Shul. You may have had that feeling also, those of you that were here. We had the Russian families here in Shul. I mean, can you imagine? You imagine that a Jew got out of Russia. Imagine the Jews that got out of Russia want to come to Shul after 70 years of atheism. Imagine that they circumcise themselves. And they're in the United States. Nobody's making them do it. But we're so accustomed that we don't give it a second thought. You know, it was very nice. We had Russian people in Shul. Wasn't that nice? So that attitude, which is part and parcel of us, apparently somehow is counterproductive towards Mashiach. During this battle, our rabbis tell us, Chizkio had to deal with a defeatist camp within the Jewish people. There was a man called Shavna, who was a king's advisor, and he was the leader of the government, and he undoubtedly wrote all the articles on the op-ed page, and he wanted to have an international conference, and he wanted to settle everything. So he took a vote, he took a poll, right? The world is democratic. The world is one big shul meeting. And the vote was that they should give up, surrender. Why should they pursue the defense of the city and the siege when they're going to lose anyway? And Chizkio, who was the king, refused to give up. So what did this guy Shavna did? I want you to know that nothing in the world is new. Shlomo HaMelech says, Ein kol chodosh tachas HaShemesh. There is nothing that is new. Ma she yiyeh kvar hoyo kvar. Everything that will be already happened. What did he do? He sent a message. Our rabbi said he shot an arrow with a message attached to it into the camp of Ashur, and he said as follows, the majority of the people are with me, we want to surrender. Except we got a crazy king, Chizkiyah, he doesn't want to surrender. So, wait. You know, we're going to get the king to surrender too. The Chazal say Chizkiyah was frightened. He was frightened. The majority of the people want to surrender. Maybe they're right. So the Rabboni Shalom told him that they don't count. Kesher Rishoyim Eino Min HaMinyan. God's poll is taken, you know, there are samplings of the poll is never, they take 10 million people in the poll, they take 1,000 people, and they tell you what 10 million people think from the 1,000. So it depends on the sample. So God told the Chizkiyah, they have the wrong sample. He's got the sample from Shevna, from the Rishoyim, they don't count. Who cares what they say, God said. Who cares what all of these people have to say? That's not the Eino Min HaMinyan. They're not counted. They're not involved. You just stick it out. Which is something that we see very clearly how the Rabboni Shalom works. And what happened was that the enemy was defeated. It was a great moment for the Jewish people. That moment could have brought Mashiach. But the moment wasn't grabbed for whatever reason. It wasn't held. And once a moment disappears, it disappears. I mean, without any comparisons, but just in our time, we also had such a moment. After the 67 war, we had a moment. At a moment that the Jewish people were different. Jewish people in Israel were different. The Jewish people in the... It was different. Everybody felt a surge. And nobody did anything. And then it all ended up. Then it just ended up, you know, apartments and buildings and economy and everything else. And it all frittered away. The great gift became a great liability. And the moment the promise became problems. But there was a moment. Everybody felt there was a moment. I remember that I saw the Ponev Yisharov, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, the next year. And he told me then that I don't remember his exact words in Yiddish, but he said to that effect, he said, we lost the chance. Could have done it. Could have opened up the secular world. It could have reached people. Could have changed everything. Could have built a better society. And the moment was lost. The moment to make peace was lost. Everything was lost. And that's what happened. The Tanakh describes that here. The Psichta in Eishcha Rabbah says, quotes Chizkiyah at that moment, as I said before, Ein ani ein bi koach lo laharog velo lirdof. I don't have the strength to pursue the enemy. I don't have the strength to make the victory complete. Velo lomar shiro, I don't have the strength to say shiro, to say thank you, to sing God's praises. Ela ani yoshein al mitosi, I'm going to sleep on my bed. Ve'ato sen, God, you do what you want. That's the tragedy here. 3 days later, Chizkiyah becomes ill. In Chol HaMoed Pesach. and he becomes ill with an illness that will kill him. It's no telomus. He knows it's not, you know, he doesn't have a cold. And it's an interesting thing. Our rabbis say that that Chizkio is the first person that recovered from such an illness and lived. God added 15 years to his life because of his great schusim. But he prayed to God to get it. And the reason for it, our rabbis ascribe to the fact that he didn't want to get married. In things that are hidden in heaven, it's not your business, right? He knows his son won't turn out. So, but that's not your job. Your job is to be Mekayim the mitzvah. Your job is to do what the Torah says, right? What's going to be, that's not your job. You can't be smarter than that. So if we were writing the story, then we would say that they should have a happy ending, right? He got married, and they had good children, you know, and then got, right? But no, he was 100% right. Kid turned out to be the worst of the worst. Still not an excuse. Our rabbis phrase it again in their inimitable fashion. V'chi also al daitcho shechizkio limit Torah liYisrael menashe b'no lo limit Torah. What do you think? He didn't try with his son. He didn't give him a good education. He didn't send him to the yeshiva. See, this says a tremendous insight here also into the human condition. Ela kol Talmud shalomdo, all the Talmud that he taught him. Kol omol shomal bo, all the effort that he put into him. Lo ho'ilu lo, it didn't help a bit. Sometimes it happens like that. It's not the Rebbe's fault, it's not the school's fault, it's not the parents' fault, it's nobody's fault. It just doesn't happen. Doesn't go. So it's hard to accept such a thing. And if one has to accept that, God forbid, in one's own family, then it's even harder to accept. But it's a fact. The Gemara says the only thing that helped is that God gave Yisurim to Menashe later. That helped. A few good klep, right? A month in the hospital, that helps. That, you know, that does something for the person. But everything his father put into him, useless. Again, frightening viewpoint of life, but a realistic viewpoint. So he was mispalel. He turned his face to the wall and he was mispalel. Our rabbis tell here another, again, all of these insights are each one, I can't give them over correctly, but each one is such a gem in life. The Novi Yeshayahu and Chizkio had a falling out, as in-laws sometimes have, right? Mechatonim, especially when there are disappointments. And the Novi Yeshayahu also felt disappointed that because he knew that Chizkio could have been the Melech HaMashiach, and it didn't, he was disappointed in Chizkio's choice. So they had to get together to be able to save the king. They had to get together to be able to continue to try and save the Jewish people. But neither one would go to the other one because it's a matter of honor. The king isn't going to go to the Novi, he's the king. And the Novi isn't going to go to the king because the king has done wrong. Why should he go to him? So the Gemara says, so what did God do? He made Chizkio sick, so Yeshayah had to come to be Mevaker Chole. How, again, what a different viewpoint of life. To make someone sick so the other person will have to come visit him, right? Who knows why things happen? And the Novi comes to visit him, and they reconcile. But the Novi tells him very harsh news. He says, you're not going to live. Kimei sato velo sichya. You will not live. How do you like that for a cheerful visitor? Right? Bedside manner. But Chizkio doesn't give up. The greatness of Chizkio, he said, it's not up to you. Not up to you whether I live or die. It's It's not up to the doctors. It's not up to the good friends. It's not up to anybody. And he turned his face to the wall, Vayasev Chizki Oponov Alakir, and he prayed. And Rabbeinu Shalom answered him. Rabbeinu Shalom said, fine, here. Gave him a gift. He gave him 15 years. In those 15 years, he built up the Jewish people. However, we have a problem even at the end of his life with Chizkio. Again, that's the unfulfilled grandeur, which is more disappointing sometimes than the mediocrity of a regular life. After Ashur was defeated, so then Bovel became the new bully on the block. Bovel, the Babylonian Empire, took over in the Mesopotamian area, and they became strong. When they became strong, so they sent emissaries to Chizkio, because after all, they were impressed that Chizkio had defeated Ashur, had defeated Sennacherib. So he showed off for them. He took them into the Beis HaMikdash, where he had no right to take them, and he showed them the Aron Kodesh, where he had no right to do that, and he opened up the Aron Kodesh, he took the lid, and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he took the lid off and showed them the Luchas. And he told them that that is the secret of our success. That's how we make war and we win. And Chazal disagreed. Chazal said he had no right to show it to them, he had no right to tell them that. And the Aron did not save them. The Aron had not saved them before also. The Aron had been captured by the Philistines. There is no artifact, no matter how holy, even the Luchas of God themselves, there is no artifact that saves the Jewish people. The only thing that saves the Jewish people is the Jewish people. It's people that count. And by saying that this is our defense, that's not our defense. Our defense is people. That's our source of victory. And he also showed them the booty that he had captured from Sennacherib. Don't forget the army, 180,000 men died outside the walls. They left over a lot of things. Said they had a museum of victory. He showed all of them. So our rabbis say that that's why Menashe was Menashe. His son was his son as a reaction to that behavior. He tried to curry favor with the Babylonians. And in effect, you see this pattern again. He brought Bovel into Eretz Yisrael, and then Bovel later destroyed Eretz Yisrael. He tried to make an alliance to protect himself by using Bovel, and the end was that Bovel ate him up, which is the same story that we find in the second Beis HaMikdash, that the Hashmonaim brought Rome to the land of Israel to protect them against the Greeks, and then the Romans ate him up. It's like you invite the bear to your house to protect you from the lion. Well, it could be that the lion isn't going to get you, but the bear is certainly going to get you after a while. It's very hard to get him to move out. And one would think that that basic lesson was clear, but it repeats itself over and over again in history, and certainly over and over again in Jewish history. So these insights into Chizkio give us a much clearer picture, I think, of the time and of what he went through and of what was involved in his lifetime. Now, his relative Yeshaya was killed by Menashe. And the greatness of the Navi is somewhat not dimmed, but it has to be seen in the perspective of the family tragedy that existed. We always think of the Nevi'im. Most of the Nevi'im, if not all the Nevi'im, had very tragic personal lives. The Navi Yeshayahu was not different. Now, Yeshayahu is the great Navi of the Jewish people. After Moshe Rabbeinu, Yeshayahu is the Navi. Yeshayahu is the prophet of doom, of destruction, and he's also the prophet of redemption and of the great tomorrow for the Jewish people. And he has within himself the greatest oratorical and literary gifts of any of the prophets, so that his words today, thousands of years later, are still like lightning bolts, each and every word crafted. The seven haftorahs of redemption that we read from after Tisha B'Av until Rosh Hashanah are all taken from the Navi Yeshayahu, and all portray for us in the grandest terms the eternal vision of the Jewish people and of their redemption. The Gorzev and Keves, the wolf will lie down with the sheep, and the Lo Yumadu, a time when war will be destroyed, a time of prosperity, a time of greatness. The great psukim that are taken from the Navi Yeshayahu, the most quoted, he has the plurality of haftorahs over any other Navi. And the rabbis say on him that no one loved the Jewish people as Yeshayah did. Ein lecha oev es bona yoser mi Yeshayahu. God said, no one loved my children more than... After the first mistake that he made, that he criticized the Jewish people, he never made that mistake again. Our rabbis say that why could the Navi say such sharp words against the Jewish people as he did is because he came from the king's house. And that's the idea that I mentioned to you before, that sometimes the leader, the aristocrats, those who come from the ruling class, so they see it in the greater relief and sharper focus, and they're unable to withhold their criticism, and therefore their criticism is so strong. Now, the Navi Yeshayahu is the one that describes for us the scene in heaven. That's what we say in Kedusha every day. Nekadesh Shimcha Ba'olam Echo Keshem Shemagdishim Oslo B'Shmei Morom Kakosov Al Yad Nevi Echo. Who is the Novi that described it for us? Yeshayahu. Yeshayahu is the one that brought down to us that in heaven they say Kodosh, Kodosh, Kodosh. And those words are the words in heaven that are used to praise God, and that's why we use them on earth. The greatness of Yeshayahu, part of the greatness of Yeshayahu is the fact that he is able to see past the Churban. Again, I cannot emphasize that over and over again. Chazal say that about Rabbi Akiva too. Don't forget, Rabbi Akiva lived in a time when Bar Kokhba was defeated. Rabbi Akiva himself was defeated. Rabbi Akiva is executed by the Romans with a cruel and torturous death. But Rabbi Akiva Mitzachek, he always laughed because he saw past the troubles. One of the great lessons in life, which is one of the hardest lessons of life, is to be able to see past the troubles. Our rabbis, the Gemara Makkos, says it very clearly. The Gemara says that Moshe said in the Tochecha, Va'avadetem Bagoyim, we're in the Tochecha at the end of Vayikra, that you'll be lost among the nations of the world. There won't be any Jews left. And Moshe wasn't wrong. Look at what has happened to us among the Goyim. Look at the rate of assimilation. Look at the persecution. Look what has happened to us. Vavadetem bagoyim. You'll be lost among the Goyim. But the Novi Yeshayahu said, Voyo bayom ahu yitoka b'shofar godol. On that great day, this great shofar will be sounded, and Jews that are lost will come back. Ovdim beretz Ashur, anidochim beretz Mitzrayim. Those that are lost whether in the lands of affluence or in the lands of trouble and dispersion, will come back. L'shtachavos v'har ha-kodesh b'Yerushalayim. To come back and worship God in Yerushalayim. So again, the emphasis of the Novi is upon past the trouble. So in the time that he lives, there's only trouble. He sees that Chizkiyo, the opportunity has been lost. He sees that Menashe, his grandson, rises as simply the incarnation of evil. He sees that Bovel becomes the dominant power. He has within himself the words of prophecy that prophesy the doom and the destruction of Jerusalem and the temple. He is a critic of the social imbalance and failings of the Jewish people. And yet he is the most glorious prophet of hope. Now that's a greatness, because we don't see that in people. I think that part of the idea, you know, there is a long discredited theory which is maintained only, again, by the non-Jewish Jews, by the so-called Jewish scholars. You know, there's a whole field of biblical criticism which in the world today counts for nothing because it's been disproved. It's just nonsense. But in the Hebrew University and in other places, it is still taught as the gospel truth. To use a good pun. And part of the idea is that there are many, many different authors of the Chumash and the Tanakh, and that it was all, you know, like the prophet Isaiah was written by committee. If you ever tried to write the minutes of a shul meeting by committee, let alone the words of the prophet Isaiah. There's a famous story of Ben-Gurion, who was very big on this type of biblical criticism and who fashioned himself to be a biblical scholar. Biblical scholar is not like being a brain surgeon. A brain surgeon, you have to go to school and prove yourself, right? The biblical scholar, if you say you are, you are. So he had a computer analysis done on the book of Isaiah, and it came out that there were 96 different authors. The computer said it were 96 different authors that contributed to the book of Isaiah. So the man at the Technion who did it, and who wasn't quite a fan of Ben-Gurion, took Ben-Gurion's inaugural speech when he was inaugurated as the first prime minister of Israel, and he fed it to the computer, and it came out that 84 people wrote it. So one of the oldest calumnies, one of the oldest lies that has been maintained by biblical scholars, and they still maintain it today in the face of all pieces of evidence against it. You know, there's no believer like a true believer. And the true believer need not believe in something that's true. He just believes. So one of the oldest things that the Maskilim especially put it across was that there are two Isaiahs. The book of Isaiah is written, there's the first Yeshayo, he's the prophet of doom and gloom until chapter 40. And then from chapter 40 through chapter 66, the end, that's the second Isaiah. And the second Isaiah lived in Bovel, and he's writing after the Jews came back, he's writing the story of the redemption. And then there are the real clever biblical scholars who say there are three Isaiahs. It's Deutro Isaiah, Tetro Isaiah. It's like gasoline that you buy, right? I remember I had a Rebbe, Reb Mendel Kaplan, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, who was a great and holy man. And he was a genius. I mean, Reb Mendel used to say to Shear and read something at the same time. Which to us was very disconcerting till you caught on that he could do it, you know, that he was paying attention to you. But he would read something, you know, he would have a book or, you know, the paper, he would, while he was saying the Gemara Shir. So one day, I came from a very liberal institution, so hanging around in the library was a book about Jewish history or something written by a Maskil. And in it, this guy not only said there were two Isaiahs, he had the picture of the second Isaiah in the book.
picture. So Mendel was leafing through, he was saying the shiur, he was leafing through the book, and he came to the page with the picture. And the picture said on the bottom, Yeshayahu Hasheni, the second Isaiah. So without, he didn't break stride. He kept on saying the Gemara. He took the book and he flipped it across the room in a magnificent arc, and it fell right into the waste paper basket. Swish, it right through the net, didn't touch the rim. And we were just convinced that that was a godly act, right? That it made such an impression. Nothing he could have said about that nonsense could have registered upon, and we were 14 years old then, nothing could have registered upon us. He couldn't have argued it logically, nothing. Just the flip and seeing that book go across the room and fall into the waste paper, so we knew there was no second Isaiah. There was no doubt anymore. And that nonsense we were cured of. What's the problem? Because the Western mind cannot imagine somebody that can tell you about the Churban and tell you about the Gula also. We don't know such people. We know people who are optimists. We know people who are pessimists. We know people who are far, you know, far-sighted, see a long way, and there are people who will only see tomorrow. We don't know somebody that can see both. We don't know somebody that can say, "Hoy, I'm Kevin Ovon, terrible people, miserable people. Echa hoiso lezona kiryo nemona." We don't know such a prophet that can also say, "Voya ba'achris ayomim, these great things are going to happen, and the Jewish people are great, and you talk of a shofar." Can't imagine such a person. So since we can't imagine him, so he didn't exist, right? That's the easy way out, right? So there had to be two guys, three guys, eight guys, 96 guys that wrote it. Did you know there was only one Isaiah? The Jewish people don't make things up. If there would have been more than one Isaiah, we would have found out about it before 1830. It would not have taken us 2,500 years to discover that truth. It's the same thing regarding Christianity. It's the same thing regarding everything that the Jewish people hold. We don't have any disagreements with the world, and the world is entitled to believe in whatever they want to believe in. It's a free world, and we are not here to impose our beliefs upon anyone. But don't tell us either. We were there. And if it would have happened, we would have known about it. You know, I get mail from, I don't know, I get on lists, but I wanted the lists I'm in, I keep on getting mail, you know, bringing me the good news, and he's proving to me. You're not going to tell me something now in 1988, almost 2,000 years later, that's going to change my mind. The Jewish people don't work like that. So you're not going to say there are two Isaiahs. It doesn't work like that. That's not part of the structure of the Jewish people. That's a losing non sequitur. It just is completely irrelevant to the subject. And finally, the king Menashe, who for 55 years was the king. So the Jewish people, during his time, he built up the economy. I mean, bad kings many times are good for the stock market. They are able to build up the world. It doesn't always mean that they are not productive. But he was a bad man. Chazal listed him as one of those that lost his share in the world to come, that, you know, that's gone. And he reinstituted the idol worship. If he would have been good following on the heels of his father, then also civilization would have been different. The world would have been different. He undid what his father accomplished. So he would be naturally rewarded that his descendants would undo what he did. But in that stalemate which occurred in the kingdom of Judah, no progress was made. And once no progress could be made, so then the descent into the abyss of the crimes of idolatry and of murder and of sexual immorality began to grow. And that abyss became deeper and deeper. Until eventually there was no escape from the fact that the Churban was coming. So 110 years after Chizkiyahu, I'm sorry, 120 years after the time of Chizkiyahu, the Churban would come. The Beis HaMikdash would be destroyed. There would be no miraculous event of survival. And the end of the Jewish people in their country would finally come. So again, this is the watershed, Chizkiyahu, Yeshayahu, Menashe, the watershed of Jewish society.